The boxers have been given their instructions. The seconds are out. The crowd is ready for another edition of Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing with your presenter, the boxing historian, Greg Rashid.
Yes, this is Greg Rashid, your presenter for the Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast, where we do a what if happened if two fighters had gotten together, we put them in a time machine, and we would say, what would happen if Muhammad Ali fought Joe Louis, something like that. Or in this case, this week we're going to be doing Winky Wright in the junior middleweight division versus Canelo Alvarez, a what-if fight. But like I've told folks that before, I also interview actual fighters, editors of publications, authors and all that deal in boxing. And I am so honored today to have on my program the one and only, I think he was just a legend. You might not think he's a legend, but I think he's a legend. He's a member of the Colorado Sports Hall of Fame, a member, I think, of the National Golden Gloves Hall of Fame. And we have a connection because we're both from Washington, D.C. We went to the same high school, different eras, though. Both are Rough Riders at Roosevelt High School. And we, you know, they're probably in the same neighborhood up in Petworth in Northwest. And I'm talking about the one and only, one of the hardest hitting fighters ever, not just as a heavyweight, but in all divisions. I'm talking about the touch of sleep himself, Darrell Williamson. Are you there, Darrell?
Yes, sir. I'm here, Greg. Thank you so much. That was a very kind introduction. That was very nice of you. I'm here, baby, live in Inglewood, Colorado, as we speak. And I know that you're in...
I'm way out. 8,000 miles away from you in Bangkok.
Yeah, in Bangkok. Yeah, man. Isn't that cool?
Coming in live.
You're a world traveler for sure.
Oh, yeah, but you are. You know, what you're doing in the community, because I keep up with what's going on in Colorado because I lived there for 20 years, is that you're doing so much in there with your Touch of Sleep program, the gym you have and all that. And I want to eventually talk about that. But first of all, I want to say that this program, I said, is basically about fantasy boxing in one sense. And last year, just out of curiosity, I have a number of fantasy games I use, computer games and card games. And your name is in one card game called Glory Days Boxing.
And I said, Glory
Days Boxing. It's a boxing card game.
Okay.
And one, you know, and I said, I wonder what would happen if I put Darrell against Muhammad Ali.
Oh, God. I think it's the first time someone's ever made that connection. And you know, I'm honored to even for someone to put my name in the same name, the same sentence as Muhammad Ali. It's crazy, but it feels good. I mean, I just get the chills. I mean, so that was nice of you to say that.
Well, you know what happened is you didn't win, unfortunately. You didn't win, but I did a series of bouts with you, and you finished 23-11. I put you up against some greats, and you did some great. I mean, it really showed what type of fighter you were, because you were knocking out everybody. You were just knocking out folks. You're just taking them apart. And it's just, you know, and I'm right now, as we speak, I'm trying to get you in another boxing game, a computer game called Legends of Boxing. And the guy who made that game is going to put you in that. Because what happened when I did this, as far as talking about you and putting your fights online, that you got a lot of folks out there who are loving you, some of whom never seen you fight, but have gone to YouTube to see your fights because of what I've done. So I'm just honored, you know, just to have you on. And a lot of these guys and women answer questions for you. They're not aligned with me, but we'll get to those. But I want, in fact, we'll get to, you know, before I do that, I want to ask you, first of all, your background. Because, you know, your background really is similar to my background, but your story, considering what you went through early on, going through all the foster homes and all, that, you know, someone should do a documentary about your life, but they haven't already. That's just really incredible.
You know, that is that again, that's very kind of you. We're writing a book as we speak about that.
Oh, man.
It will be called The Heavyweight Discipline, you know, a story about DeVarell Williamson's life, DeVarell Tennessee's life. I have the kids program that will work over here with in Inglewood, Colorado, in my gym called TUS Boxing Gym, Touch to Sleep Boxing Gym. And one of the kids that I work with, his father, has taken an interest in me because his son kind of like was like in awe of me, and he really, you know, he really took an interest in me. So the dad is probably like, I mean, not insecure, but he'd say, hey, I want to know more about you because my son is crazy about you.
Oh, yeah.
And he is now taking it upon himself to, like, we are putting together a book. We're writing a book, and he and his brother, his name is Oliver Stokehill, his brother Cyrus Stokehill, they both are kind of like teamwork, buddy up, teamwork, and all three of us putting the book together. I have no idea. We got a couple of chapters. It's really a rough draft, but we're going in the right direction. So we got a chance to interview a lot of friends and family from Washington D.C. early, because it's the beginning of the book. So we haven't gotten into the fighters and the friends that I met later on in life, in college and through my boxing career, because I started boxing so late at 25. We're really talking about football and basketball and childhood friends and family. So, you know, the first couple of chapters, I think we're working up to maybe chapter one up to chapter. We got chapters one through three, and then I think four, five, and six we work with. I think we're doing that because it'll be 12 chapters, because it's 12 rounds. So.
And that's great, man. I want to read that. I want to bring it over here. We're putting it on Kindle or something. I want it over here.
Is that right? We, you know, absolutely. We want a Kindle. I want it every Barnes and Noble's, every mom and pop store, any Walmart, Target. But I think it's a beautiful human interest story, and you know, just gotta make sure we package it right, because yeah, it's a story to tell. And I want the kids, but I also want adults to say, hey, man, like I have never made like 15, 20, 30 million dollars, and that's not the story. The story is, you know, it's more me out in the world than it is of some of those other guys that have had that kind of success. But I think that it's a good story to tell about any children, whether they're black, white, Hispanic, Asian, yeah, because, you know, they have similarities. We all have, you know, have, you know, stuff we have to overcome. And we've done a, you know, we've done a pretty decent job with that of getting here. And so you start boxing at 25. You don't know one way or another what's going on. You're not just sitting around waiting, but, you know, you're trying to play football and basketball. Right. And I had no idea that I was ever better at boxing than I ever was at football and basketball.
Before you go on, how did you decide to get into boxing after being in football and basketball and trying out for the Colts? I want people to know that too, that you try out for the Indianapolis Colts. What made you decide to get in boxing? Because I've never, you know, I've seen about you, I've never seen, even when I interviewed you years ago, I never asked you, how did you end up doing that?
You know, Greg, I started boxing just because I want to stay in shape for football. So that was my whole reasoning for getting into boxing, because they said if you train like a boxer, you'd be in great shape for football. And I wanted to play football in the NFL. I wanted to play quarterback. And, you know, like, you know, you had those, you know, like I had a small stint with the Indianapolis Colts back in 94. I tried out for the Arizona Rattlers, the arena football. Like, just trying to find a way, and it didn't happen. But I was also being introduced to boxing as well, just to stay in shape. And who knew that I've had so much success at boxing and so late in the game? And who knew? It just took off.
And I'm glad you said that. You're bringing up a question one of my listeners asked. His name is Bobby Jones. He wanted to know, was your power natural, or was it developed somehow? Did they just look at you and say, man, this guy can hit, or did you develop something?
I think it was more natural because of football. I'm throwing football. I was a quarterback at Roosevelt and at our alma mater. And because of that, you know, I'm throwing football time and time again. I feel like I can throw it the whole football field at once upon a time. And just having a strong right arm over and over and over, it was a natural motion of throwing a punch, a right hand punch. No, not a haymaker, but a straight right hand. It's kind of similar to just throwing a ball for a 15-yard out or someone streaking down the sideline, on a zero route. So running a nine route. I had success. And I just, it was a God-given success, a good right hand of throwing the football. And so I thought it was
yeah. And listeners, you got to understand, this man I'm talking to, Earl Williams, is one of the all-time, as I said earlier, knockout artists in boxing. Not just heavyweight, all time. They didn't call him Touch of Sweet for nothing. And I will argue this with anyone. I think DeVero, you would have been heavyweight champion of the world. But what happened in that fight against Vladimir Klitschko with the cut and all, I think you would, because you were beating, and I think you would have been champion. You knocked him down. I think
I totally agree with you with the Klitschko cut, that the fight got stopped early because, it looked like that I didn't get touched, but he was bleeding from the cut, but he's also bleeding from his eye, so there's a number of things. And I think Vladimir Klitschko, I think he was nervous all week. I think a lot of his fights had been like kind of controlled atmosphere, like someone, not saying he's going to lose, but you know that he was better than that guy. And by the time the top of the week of our fight week, they were saying, oh, you're fighting DeVero. He's not coming to lay down. So he was nervous. The whole week, he was so nervous that his nose was bleeding. Before the fight, they was trying to stop his nose from bleeding. Up until the fight, it's just, I should have won that fight. If nothing else, we should have did a do-over. We should have did a mulligan, as they say in golf. It's a do-over. Shelly Finkel, his manager at the time, said, DeVero, you didn't do yourself any harm, but we're not fighting you again. He said that in the ring. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Maybe Styles makes fights, but they did not want any more part of that. They said, hey, we're glad we got the win, and we're out. And he went on to be heavyweight champion, also a Hall of Fame boxer. And I was really upset because I thought he was gonna say something in his Hall of Fame speech, man. Like, he wanna thank DeVero Williamson, because I think that after we fought, I thought he fought a lot like me after the fight. So he didn't give me credit for stealing my style.
Yeah, you sure did. I also think you beat Chris Berg. I remember everyone beat Chris. I think you beat him too.
But they
gave it to Berg.
Berg. So, that fight was closer than the. I thought that fight was at least closer than the Klitschko fight.
Yeah.
You had the guy. So I had the hand problem or the arm problem at that time. I had bone spurs in my right elbow, and who knows me for not throwing my right hand in the fight? No one. I'm throwing it. That's my best weapon. So I'm going to throw it a million times, and for me not to be able to throw it as much times as I wanted to against Chris Berg, something was wrong.
Yeah.
But again, Greg, you ask yourself, I would go in a hotel room or you pray to the Almighty, why me? Why now? Why is this happening? Like, you bring me this far, God, to drop me off here? You whatever your spirituality is, you're asking yourself, your inner soul, what am I doing that brought me here? I beat this guy, I beat that guy, I beat that guy, I beat that guy. Come on, baby. it's time. It's time for the Touch of Sleep to take it, take it across the world. You know what I mean? And I get it. It's been around the world, but it certainly would have, been nice if it become the heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, you would have been there, but you're a champion in other ways. That's the main thing. You're a champion in the neighborhood, throughout the country, and probably throughout the world. The stuff you've done over the years. And if, I remember the first time I saw you at the Denver Coliseum. But that's that interview, but I've never seen you fight. And you knocked the hardest punch I've ever seen in a live fight when you knocked out Big Ed White. I don't even think
wow, you remember him? Because he's God. Like, what, 6'7", like, shit, 300 pounds? He's a big boy. He's a big man. He was dark-skinned, bald-headed. Do you remember that, huh?
I remember that. When he hit that mat, I said, my God, he ain't never getting up. You clocked it. I don't think it lasted 2 minutes.
I think it was the first or second round. Yes, around the first or second round. But that was a big man. Wow, yeah. That's crazy. I remember that.
That's
crazy. Because he's like, I'm 6'4", so he made me look little. Because he's probably 6'7".
Yeah,
he's every bit of 300 pounds. And then with our alma mater, Corey Sanders, that went to Roosevelt as well.
Yeah.
He was 102 pounds bigger than me when we fought. And, I was able to get him out of there as well. And it's crazy that I fought so many people that were so much bigger than me. Like, can you imagine fighting a guy 102 pounds bigger than you in a fight? I mean, he wasn't like he was big, but he's big. Now, he wasn't fat. He was big.
He was big.
You know what I mean? And he could fight.
Yeah. That's the thing. It was amazing. I mean, your career is it's just something that, I'm glad you're writing that book because people have to know it. But I got some other questions for you. This is from Jeff Ray. I want to ask you a couple of questions. He basically about strategy. He wants you to, can you explain how strategy works in the ring for you? How did it work for you?
Well, strategy is, like you have a game plan before you fight. And of course, everybody wants to start with a good jab. And the jab kind of tells you about your opponent. Either you jab him to the body, to the shoulder, to the neck. You don't want to, you don't want to gamble and use the jab, because we all want the face shot, the head shot. But that may not be there. So the body has a bigger torso or bigger target that you can hit. So I'm aiming for the guy's shoulder, his arm, his chest, to keep touching him. When he feels my power, man, he's getting out of there. So I'm pumping the jab. Then I'm looking to add the right hand or hook, something to the body, something to the head. And, and you kind of seeing where his – does he go to his right? Does he go to his left? I mean, does he back up? What does he do when I faint? And you kind of reading. You're kind of reading on the job. But you've done it so many times with so many different sparring partners and so many different fighters that it becomes natural. And you go into it a lot sooner. What this guy has, his best punch. Okay, his best punch is his left hook. His best punch is his right hand. Okay, I'm going to go to my right and see what happens. And, I'm going to use those kind of strategy, techniques of preparation before my fight, before each fighter. And that's kind of how it's come to be. And how I've had success in my career is that I've taken some chances, I'll take some chances, and not gambling, but like calculated risk. Okay, I'm gonna jab to the body. Okay, now I'm gonna look at the body and jab to the face. But remember, the body punch and the head shot is only 6 inches, so I'm not going way up and way down. I'm leaving with a jab. But I mean, I'm really pumping it, and I'm not pumping it so hard that that's my killer shot. But I need to pump it enough that it keeps the guy from thinking about my right hand. Like, damn. I everybody in the world knows I got a good right hand. I mean, they've known that through the whole amateur career. Probably after my third or fourth fight, they say, oh my God, watch him. He got a good right hand. And it's been, it's been my moniker for a long time. You know what I mean? So,
you should write I know you've done instruction manuals on that, but what you're saying, you don't see now in heavyweight boxing, what you're talking about. You don't see guys doing what you just described. It's whole different way now than the way you described how to do strategy in a fight.
But you have to, like, I want to beat the guy to the centering. So a lot of times, if you see me say ding ding ding, and you know, after we touch gloves and go back to the corner, I want to beat my guy to the center ring like this, the light in the center ring.
Right.
Okay. I want to beat him to that light. Now I got him either moving around or he's trying to sit down, or I'll get him to engage. So maybe I'll go 1-2 or jab to the body and then a 1-1-2 and then get him to follow me. So once you hit him, you know, somebody wants their leg back. So as right. he wants his leg back, he's got to come and get it back. So what he's doing is that he's expending energy trying to chase me and trying to walk me down. And I'm in good shape, so I'm going left and right. I can box left, I can box going to my left and my right. So now by the time he finally gets to me, he's out of gas. I mean, he throws a 1-2, and he's like, oh. And then he'll, you know, we'll tie each other up, and then you can hear him breathing in my ear like, oh. And I would say to myself, like, oh, no. You're not going to hit me in my head now and get tired. Oh, no. It's my time to go to work. So, you know, you have those kind of different things with different fighters and different strategies. And that's, you know, something I use, you know, is to start. I'll do something to make him do something. I'll do something, then do something else. I'll do something to make him do something, then I'll do something else. I'll do something to make him do something, then I'll do something else. That's kind of like things in my head. You mean, like, I mean, I'm going to do something. I'm going to keep touching him. Make him respond to that, and then respond to that. And I'm gonna keep doing that back and forth. And sometimes, you know, you box a guy for 4 or 5 rounds and they never really catch on to what you're doing. I was boxing a guy, the amazing Oliver McCall, you know what I mean, at Madison Square Garden, and I'm beating him, but he's never really making an adjustment of what we're doing in the fight. And he's talented, he's smart. You know, he's tough, he's rugged, but every time I would do something, I would always be a step or two ahead of him. And it's like, I couldn't believe that he was letting me get away with some of the things he was letting me get away with, because he was always, you know, a day late and a dollar short. Man. So, but it was a good fight because it forced me to think and to concentrate on what I need to do.
Let me ask you this,
I'm sorry, this is...
What's the best trap you ever laid in a ring as far as against the fight? A strategy that you, a trap that you said, man, I got him then.
Just didn't play well, but I for holding and I want a majority decision. I knocked him down twice. They took points for holding and I still want a majority decision, but I fought him in his hometown. It's crazy, I don't know what.
Amazing. That's something. Let me see. He has one more question here. I'll say this question. He wants to know, and this is Jeff Ray again, he wants to know, do you really listen to the corner instructions between rounds?
Or is absolutely.
You
know what? Depending on, I'll give you another situation. That same guy, Robert Wiggins, I fought, he broke my jaw. I want to say in the second round. I mean, and because I know that, because when I spit my blood in the bucket, it was a deep, dark, rich blood that I'd never seen before. But I didn't panic. And I wasn't sure at the time that I was in the fight, it was the coach, George Durbin. I wasn't sure if that coach loved me enough to say, hey, I'm going to stop the fight. You'll live to fight enough again. I couldn't tell him. So when he was in the corner talking to me, I didn't hear anything, Greg. You hear me? I want to think about my damn jaw. You mean I'm thinking about that blood and like, damn. Man. And I'm saying to myself, I'm listening to, you know, the guy who you talked about earlier, Muhammad Ali, said, man, Muhammad Ali was saying that same thing when he got his jaw broken. He said, I'm not gonna let him hit me again. And sure enough, you go right up to the guy, hit you in the same spot. He's like, you gotta be kidding me. But I was able to deal with that. I fought him. I got my jaw broke probably in the second round. I fought 8 more rounds with a broken jaw and won a majority decision against Robert Wiggins in his hometown of Connecticut, somewhere part of Connecticut. It was crazy. But yes, you are listening to your coaches. You listen to instructions. A I was fighting a guy named Antoine Chazelle. He was fighting in Washington Heights in New York City. Antoine Chazelle is from, he's from Florida. Okay? He's from Florida.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, he just got out of prison. Maybe he just got out of parole or whatever. But he had, he's an African American guy. But he had like plaits, braids, and like just hair wasn't, he didn't have the money to get his hair done before the fight. So he probably counted on money from fight to get his hair done or get his hair braided. At any rate, he whooped my ass the first round. Okay? He was beating me. I'm looking at my coach like, who the hell is this guy? You mean? Because I hadn't heard of him before. We had the same record. We both 81-81. And we was like, not a do or die, but it was a crossroads fight. So I came back to the corner, and I'm laughing because at the same time, the coach, George Durbin, was giving me water. But he was laughing. He said, oh, you're going to fight now because this guy was whooping your ass. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I started laughing because, you know, of course, he, you know, because he saw him. You know, we know we lost that first round big, okay? Second round, I came out there and was able to, you know, put some tricks together, and we were able to get him out of there. We were able to stop him. And, of course, when the fight was stopped, you know, like, we shook hands, whatever. But at the end, I saw him in the locker room. And I said, hey, you know, and Chazelle. And I grabbed him and said, man, do you think they stopped it too soon? Like, you want to know if the fat guy felt like he got robbed or you got cheated or whatever. He said, nah. I was high. Like I was still woozy. Oh, and they did the right thing by stopping the fight. I wasn't there anymore. And I can shake his hands and respect. Like, what I don't want to do is people like tell you that the fight was starting premature or whatever. I'm asking the guy who I fought, do you think they stopped the fight? Not that I'm bragging about it. I'm just saying, hey, do you feel like the fight was fair or the fight was no stop? Because he did have his take. He did have his way with me in the first round. But right. The very next round, I turned it on. You mean because I'm a competitor. And, we was able to get him out of there. But, you know what I mean? And it's crazy because I fought so many guys. Out of these 35 fights that I had, man, there's about 12 or 13 guys who never fought again.
You felt that right hand. I was like, oh, that's it. Let me get another career, you know, and I don't want to do this.
Maybe they want to be a musician or something. Who knows? But, you know, it's crazy. I haven't. And you can just look through my fight facts and look at all the guys who have fought. Antoine Chazelle, Dirk Jefferson, Paul Dowdy. I mean, like, it goes on and on. The guys that never had a fight, another fight after that, fighting with DeVarrell Williamson.
Hey, tell me, DeVarrell, I know that you fought Ramon Brewster in the amateur, but they never hooked you two up in the pro.
Yeah, that's a tough fight. And we fought four times as amateur.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a scenario. So we have Nate Jones, who was the Olympic representative in 96. We have Ramon Brewster, who turned out to be the WBO heavyweight champion of the world. Okay. And you have DeVarrell Williamson. So the three of us will like play hot potato because I'll be number one. Then, you know, you shuffle the deck, Nate Jones number one. Shuffle the deck, Ramon Brewster number one. You know, 6 weeks later, he's number one.
Right.
8 weeks later, another one. We did this from 95, 96, and it's like we must have changed spots. And really, it was really me, Ramon Brewster, and I were changing spots. Nate Jones won when it really counted because he won and got to the Olympian. He had the Olympic spot. But he was never number one as he was coming up for 2 years before the Olympics. He was never number one. Although he won the Golden Gloves, you know, he's never number one. I won the Golden Gloves in the U.S. Championships, the Pals. I won everything. Everything you put your hands on, I felt good. It's crazy how the sport, this boxing goes and the timing of it. You got to be right at the right time. It's like, it's kind of like the track meet. Like, you got to be, you know, you got to peak for it. You got to peak for it. And you know, you got to be ready, you know, you got to be ready at the right time to do your thing. And that's kind of, you know, what happened is that Nate Jones beat me going to the 96 Olympic trials, Olympics, whatever, in the box off. I guarantee you, had it gone another month, I think I would have stopped him because I had gotten that much better than he was at that time. And, I think that if he had boxed with me during Olympic camp, he probably wouldn't have lost to David DeFeobon from Canada. Because we had David DeFeobon and I had a very, very similar style.
Yeah, that's something. Now, I want to ask you, I'm going to ask you this. I didn't know this one. I thought I knew everything about you, but I didn't know you were a stand-up comedian. I never knew that.
Yes. It's funny because my wife was talking about that just the other day about, opening up for Chris Tucker was huge. I mean, this is before Friday. This is before Rush Hour 1, Rush Hour 2, Rush Hour 3. This is before he was in a movie with Charlie Sheen or whatever. He's a cool guy. He's a funny guy. I opened up for him in Phoenix, Arizona. I opened up for Tommy Davidson. Wow. I opened up for other couple of headliners. It was more of a dare because we were at the events of the Roxy's nightclub, and they were probably stalling, and they wanted to know if people come up on stage and tell a few jokes. And so my buddies at the time was like, "Man, I dare you. You're supposed to be so funny at the basketball court. You're so funny over here." I said, "Yeah, give me the mic. Give me the mic. Where's that?" So the guy let me come up there on stage, and I told a few jokes. I don't know, did something about starting with the Phoenix Cardinals football players were in the house at the time. They were in attendance. Not all of them, but enough of them, right. And I was using, I remember going up to, on the stage saying to, I was saying, "Man, I'm lucky enough to be here tonight because I had a traffic violation, and this wasn't my first one, so I wasn't sure if they was going to, I didn't have enough money to pay it, so maybe they was going to let me, stay in jail for a couple of days to pay it off." And I wasn't sure how they was going to do it, but the person was in front of me who saw the judge was a younger kid who were having a problem with his parents. His mother and father were were right there in the courthouse, and the judge asked the kid, that, "Do you want to live with your mom?" He looked at his mom and he shook his head and said, "No." He said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Well, she beats me too much." And then the judge will say, "Well, do you want to live? Would you like to live with your father's son because your father's here?" He looked over there at his father and shook his head like nervously. He said, "No." He said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Because he beats me too much." He said, "Well, son, your mother and your father are here. Well, who else do you want to live with? Your mother and father?" He said, "I want to live with the Arizona Cardinals because they don't beat nobody." I mean, and everybody fell out laughing. And I was, that was one of my ones to get, kind of get people going. And I started going from there on. And they let me probably talk about, maybe 7 to 10 minutes. And I got a good 8 good laughs in there. And that was cool because the manager of the Roxy nightclub invited me back and said, "Hey, we want you to do the same thing." And then he'll give me $50 or $100, thinking that, if you give me $100, that I'm going to turn around and take the $100 and do what? Buy drinks. Give it right back to you. No, I'm not. I don't drink. So I'm going to give me a Shirley Temple. I'm going to babysit that Shirley Temple, and I'm going to have a good time. So it was cool. It was just cool to be on the stage with God. Wow. And to watch me at the time that I did it. This is like 1994. So you don't know Chris Tucker going to do Rush Hour. You don't know Chris Tucker going to do the movie Friday. You don't know he's going to do for the money with Charlie Sheen. So you don't know any of these things, but it's so cool to see these people blossom to how amazing they come out to be as actors. Right. Or you roll with Floyd Mayweather. Now, remember, I'm named Floyd Mayweather Pretty Boy Floyd, remember? Now he goes as Money Mayweather, but you don't know this guy is going. He's just a regular guy. He's a funny guy. His dad's a professional boxer, and he's a good boxer. He's a good friend. and he's cool as I don't know what. And, you know, he turned out to make millions and millions of dollars and, you know, trying to be one of the best boxers to ever do it. And it's pretty cool to know.
I didn't know that. Man. Oh, you gave him that.
You know what I mean? Like, I gave him Pretty Boy Floyd. I gave Brian the Hawaiian Punch, Brian Beloy the Hawaiian Punch. I'm a jokester, so I give out, you know, nicknames and stuff like that. You know, like you call Tava Sweet Black, or you call Antonio, I mean, like just different things. Like I'm a jokester. So it's not jokes, but it's just like nicknames that, you know, you give people, and they stick.
That's an exclusive on you. I didn't know that. Learn something new for you, man. And the thing is, too, when you're saying your buddies were daring you, they got to understand that you don't dare people from D.C. You never do that. Because we'll follow up.
But they didn't know because they didn't know because most of them was from Arizona, so they didn't really know the D.C. No, like that. We crazy, or we gonna do it.
Yeah,
we gonna make it happen.
We think a different way. We think a whole different
way. That's a fact.
But DeVero, I'm not gonna hold you up because I know it's late then. You know, and you know, I'm in your future because it's Saturday morning here versus Friday night, late Friday night over there in Colorado. But I want to ask you before we go, tell me a little bit about Touch of Sleep as far as what you're doing in the region in Englewood. And if you're thinking
let
about
me tell you really, let me tell you really quick. My big
uh-huh, go ahead.
Really quick, my big brother Lawrence Claybay from Hartford, Connecticut, he gave me the nickname and we're in the world championships in 1995 in Berlin, Germany. So we sparred, you know, I don't know, 200-300 rounds over the years. But having said that, I was calling myself Dangerous Dad. He said, man, you have your power in both hands. So he started calling me the Touch of Sleep, and I've been having the Touch of Sleep name since April 1995. So what I was saying is that, like, the community has really embraced me. I have put my heart into community over here in Englewood, Colorado. We have a gym, and the kids don't know, but you know, because we come from nothing in Washington, D.C., and I owe it to them. They have no idea why I'm doing what I'm doing, but I owe it to them. I know that, you know, in this world, Greg, that you want to give more than you've taken out.
That's
you
right.
mean, and that's my hope, that before they throw dirt over me, before I'm like in the ground, I want to know that I've given more than I've actually taken out. Like, you know, I've turned the hand over, given out to more in the community. And so I'm in a community that looks a little bit different from my community as a kid, but it's still those kids who need that kind of encouragement and that kind of love. So I'm paying back all the stuff that the before and after school programs, the summer camps over the summer, at the resident camp, the boys club, 14 boys club where I played football and basketball at, Benning Park Rec Center, all the things, all those schools and organizations that our wonderful Mayor Manberry has provided for us, I owe it back to him. So yeah. I'm here in Colorado still paying my debt to my experience of Washington, D.C. for bracing me, for giving me the courage, giving me the heart, giving me the confidence to go out and, you know, flex my muscles and to try to find a way in this world. I mean, in the best way.
Right. You know, and you've done, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, Rivero is in the Colorado Sports Hall of Fame. He's in the National Golden Gloves Hall of Fame, but he's in the world, the universe Hall of Fame. This man is just amazing, incredible. I'm just honored to have you on. It's like having a, you know, it's like having a royalty on this program. I mean, really, you know, just having you on here is really worth it. I'm just so glad to have you on today. And do you have any, like, words of advice for folks out there as far as anything you want to leave us with?
You know, I always try to encourage, you know, like, when you're having success at doing something. You know, I try to remind my kids. I have, you know, 5 kids, and one of my sons just graduated from the University of Richmond, and he's done so well as a young man in school. I always like try to encourage him, say, man, just do what you've always done. Do what you've always done. Like, because, you know, there's an unknown. There's an X factor. There's a wall here. And you don't really know what's behind that door, what's behind that wall. But I'm just telling them to do what you've always done. I try to tell kids to come into the gym to believe in themselves. I mean, like, you mean, but take some risks. You know what I mean, take calculated risks. But sometimes it's not going to be as calculated as you want it to be. But, man, you know, this world is not necessarily promised one way or another. But if you want something, you have to try. You have to go for it. No one knows that you want the red ice cream. You know what I mean? You're waiting for Mrs. Adams to give you red ice cream. She has no idea you want the red ice cream. So she gives you the green one or the blue one or the yellow one. But until you say something, open your mouth, say, hey, maybe she says no. But she would never, you know, but she had no idea, say, you know, my red is my favorite. You know, Ms. Adams, may I have the red ice cream? She may say, yes, here you go. Here you go, young lady, or here you go, young man. But you don't know. So you got to open your mouth and you got to, like, ask for what you want. And, you know, and not necessarily demand it, but just ask for it and work for it. I mean, right. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay not to get what you want, but at least I want you to know what I wanted, you know. That's my favorite, you know? And I want to do it, but I want to feel like I've earned it. I deserved it. So right. I want the young people to know that, to continue to, I mean, it's more than believe in yourself. Believe in yourself, but also take some chances. Take some risks. I mean, I don't mean crazy. I don't mean jump over the bridge risk. I mean, like, hey, I want to go and ask. I want to be a dancer. Well, no, I want to be in a band. I want to take a chance. Maybe I don't play the drums as good as I should. Okay, I play the cymbals. Maybe I don't play the saxophone. You know, maybe I play. You know, I do something else that I want to be a part of until I get my game up better. So I've always did something. Arizona. I think it's Eric Scott, Arizona. Wrote a book called Doing Well by Doing Good. Lawrence Emily is called a book called Doing Well by Be in motion. Have something already in place. You know, why are you not just sitting there waiting on a job to knock on your door? Start working. Start cutting some grass. Start delivering some papers. Start doing some stuff that you're doing before you get your job. No job is above you. No job is beneath you. We wanna get there. And so I've always had that concept, you know, that I wanted to do something, and it happened. Who knows? I thought about it since 25 years old. You can't tell me that I planned it all my life. You know what I mean? You know, but I was already had something else in place, and then this other thing worked out, and that's kind of how life is. How life, you know, give you these different situations.
And that's a great message, Vero. I mean, I'm almost tearing up as I hear that. I just am so thankful to have you on here today. And we got to get you back on here, you know, when you get the book out and everything. But anytime, you're welcome anytime to come on here. So, you know, you're just an inspiration to everyone. I know that everyone that's listening to this, when they hear this, they'll say the same thing. You are a true world-class inspiration. You are a Hall of Famer.
You are just amazing. Great. Thank you so much for. Again, I apologize for loose wires, but I called back and we made it happen. So I'm grateful for you were patient, and I know it's a little bit later at night, but that means that much to me for you to reach out and for me to follow my word and say that I would do it. Also, you know, I'm a part of the TikTok family now. I'm, you know, when you want to follow me, Touch the Sleep at TikTok. You know, just stay close to me. So, you know, let the readers and the fans know I'm here on TikTok. I'm 55, but I'm catching on. I'm late, but I'm here to party, baby. I'm late with social media, but I'm here to party. So,
man, that's a great guy. That's a really great guy. I was so happy to interview him today. You know, Devero Williamson. If you don't know him, and if you're a boxing fan, you do now. You know him, but you don't. You know now. Just a legend. Just a legend. I'm just so honored to have him on. And I gotta apologize. My mic was awful. Mine, his was perfect. And you want to hear him. You don't hear me. You don't hear me. But anyway, my mic was just awful. And I hope it's better now. It sounds like, I think it's better now. But I need another mic. I need another mic. I know that. But you know, I'm going to play the song now for DeVero. This is Heart of a Champion by Nelly. And he has a true heart of a champion, DeVero Williams. And let's hear that on the Show the Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast.
STL Derby, I'm like Magic to Kareem, man. You tell me I ain't worthy. I ain't speaking about a jersey, I'm speaking about income.
Did you hear that, Elizabeth? Here come the big one.
I put more money in the community than you got in your budget. I put my put your advance to the toilet, then flush it. My last stance be a stance of a general custard. I hot dog cause I can, I got the cheese and mustard. I got the status of a Hall of Fame in just two records. That's why I'm back up at the Super Bowl with Julius Peppers. I got that can't stop, won't stop in my vein. That's why they can't stop, won't stop screaming the name.
Nelly, Nelly.
Go tell a friend to tell a friend. I'ma keep the same grin whether I lose or win. Up or down 10, I'ma fight to the end. Let's go.
Ain't no way they can stop me now, Nelly, cause I'm on my way. I can feel my ring coming. It's the blood of a champion. Bumping deep inside my veins. Too much pride to be running. I'ma get what I can and more. Even if my blood, my sweat, and my tears don't mean nothing. It's the heart of a champion.
It's the heart of a
results are just hacking. So that's three of us now. Me, AI, and Shaqin'. Come and look to the eyes I say. Of a man with more heart than Hallmark on Valentine's Day. I'm the one that you've been raving about. Like Ray Lewis. I think you ought to go to change your route. Cause you don't know if I'm blitzing or if I'm sitting there eating. Waiting for you to throw a trip. Drop back and throw up a pick, man.
Ain't no way they can know. Ain't no way they can know. Stop me now, Nelly, cause I'm on my way. I can feel my ring coming. It's the blood of a champion. Bumping deep inside my veins. Too much pride to be running. I'ma get what I can and more. Even if my blood, my sweat, and my tears don't mean nothing. It's the heart of a champion.
It's the heart of a. It's the heart of a. It's like a big time decision made. I'm high, it's worth it. If hard work pays off, the easy work is worthless. My work ain't no habit, man. I do it on purpose. I push myself to the limit, so my talent is surface. So now it's curtains and drapes on anybody who hates disliking what I'm reciting, biting what I've been writing. I've been dog fighting, scratching and clawing on every height, trying to make you remember me like you remember the Titans. Cause I'm a warrior. My daddy was a soldier, a Vietnam vet. A little dirty, I thought I told ya. I'm supposed to whip up your town and test the roasters. Like Folgers, man. I'm young, black, and rich. As good as it gets. And giving your point guard fits. Think he the same pressure, man. But he ain't seen. Oh.
Ain't no way they can know. 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 Ain't no way they can stop me now. Nelly, cause I'm on my way. I can feel my ring coming. It's the blood of a champion. Bumping deep inside my veins. Too much pride to be running. I'ma get what I can. Yeah.
and Nelly and Heart of a Champion. And that goes out to Devero Williamson, true champion, champion of the world. You know, he didn't win the heavyweight championship, but he won a better championship by being a champion of the world, a leader, community activist, just a great guy. I just enjoy talking to him, and we're going to have him back on here again. And again, I apologize for my mic earlier. Just I got to get a new mic. I do have to get a new mic. But anyway, we're going to get now to the fantasy world of the Show the Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast. And again, this fight I mentioned earlier is going to be between two junior middleweights. What if Canelo Alvarez fought Winky Wright, you know, one Hall of Famer? Canelo, I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame one day. And he gets a lot of flack, but Canelo's a great fighter. Great fighter. You know, he's fought everyone. He doesn't avoid folks. And neither did Winky Wright. Winky Wright is the master of defense. Just an amazing fighter. You've never seen him, go online and look at Winky Wright. And again, I'm saying that not because he's from D.C., but he is from Washington, D.C., like me and Devero. But we're going to get to this fight right now. And like I always say, if you have a fighter, two fighters that you want to see fight on the Show the Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast, just send me a note. Send me a note, and I'll be more than happy to put them on here. We've got a lot of upcoming fights coming on, thanks to listeners like you, because you're a boxing fan. You love boxing. So let's right now get to the second main event. The main event was Devero or Williamson, but this is the second, the co-main event. And this is right now, Winky Wright versus Canelo Alvarez. Sit back, get your favorite beverage, whatever you have. Just let your mind relax. We're going into the what-if world. So let's hear that on the podcast, the Show the Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast.
Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Ronald Winky Wright in the junior middleweight division. The 12-rounder is judged on the 10-point must system. The judges are Mark Kahn, Billy Burke, Wilfredo Garcia. The referee will be the always dapper Vic Draculic. The ref gives the fighters their instructions. The seconds are out. The bell sounds for round one. Canelo Alvarez comes out firing a 3-point right to Winky Wright's left side. Wright clinches. The fighters break out of the clinch at ring center. Alvarez lands a 5-point left jab that caused Wright to fall into the ropes above the media table. Wright bounces off the ropes and lands a 2-point combination. Wright is moving about the ring, trying to establish position. Wright has cut off the ring and pinned Saul Alvarez in the far corner. Wright lands a partially blocked 1-point left cross. Alvarez misses with a left jab, but lands a 5-point right shot to the body that causes Wright to wince. Wright recovers but misses with a left uppercut. Alvarez counters with a 2-point right cross and a 3-point left hook. These guys are going to war at ring center. Wright lands a partially blocked jab for 1 point at the bell. Round one, points scored 19 for Alvarez, 4 points for Wright. The crowd is looking for more fireworks as round two begins. The fighters meet at ring center. Wright lands a 2-point right cross, then clinches Alvarez. The ref separates the fighters. Wright immediately fires a 2-point left jab, a 3-point combo, and 2-point right jab. Alvarez appears confused by Winky's hand speed. Wright misses with a right cross. The fighters are in ring center. Wright's high guard is making him a difficult target for Canelo. His corner is urging him to go to the body and stop headhunting. Wright is moving around Alvarez's right. The fighters move to ring center. Saul Alvarez lands a 5-point combination that buckled Wright's knees. Saul Alvarez scores 5 points. Ronald Wright's knees buckled. The crowd is on its feet, thinking Alvarez may score a knockdown. Alvarez misses with huge left cross. Wright counters with a 2-point left uppercut. Alvarez misses with a right cross. Wright counters with a 2-point jab to the belly. The crowd is enjoying the action as the bell sounds to end round two. Round two. Points scored Saul Alvarez with 5 points, Ronald Wright with 13 points. The bell sounds for round three. Alvarez stalks Wright and lands a 2-point combination. His follow-up right cross whizzes past Wright's right ear. Wright lands a two-point left hook, a three-point right uppercut, and two-point left jab. Wright is painting a picture on Alvarez's face. Alvarez clinches to stop Wright's onslaught. As the ref separates the fighters, Alvarez hits Wright with a right jab. Wright's corner is screaming about the cheap shot. The ref walks Alvarez to a neutral corner and warns him and his corner about hitting on the break. The crowd is booing Alvarez for the cheap shot. The fighters meet at ring center where Wright lands a three-point combo. Alvarez misses with an uppercut. Wright lands a right cross for 5 points. Alvarez backs into the ropes after that shot. Alvarez comes off the ropes and misses with a left jab. Alvarez is moving about the ring, trying to establish position. At the bell, Alvarez scores 5 points with a right cross as Wright was turning to go back to his corner. The crowd is furious by another Alvarez cheap shot. The ref points at Alvarez and takes a point away. Canelo is getting frustrated by Winky's smooth boxing style and is answering with cheap shots. Points scored in round three. Saul Alvarez with 7 points, Ronald Wright with 15 points. As the bell sounds for round four, the boos are raining down on Alvarez. Alvarez has always been a fan favorite, but his dirty tactics have turned the crowd against him. Alvarez comes to meet Wright at ring center. Alvarez lands a two-point left jab. Alvarez misses with a left uppercut and a right cross. Wright misses with a counter-right jab. Alvarez clinches. Alvarez misses with a combination out of the clinch, then clinches Wright again. Both fighters are warned for excessive holding. Wright lands a two-point right uppercut, then misses with a left jab. Alvarez counters with a two-point left jab. Alvarez lands a three-point right cross to the Wright's gut. It looked low from here. The ref also saw it was low and warns Alvarez again. The fighters are circling each other. Alvarez lands a five-point right cross that may have stunned Wright. Alvarez follows with a three-point combo. He then grabs Wright and tries to hit him as he holds his right arm in a vice. Alvarez is warned for holding and hitting and has another point taken away from him. The crowd is booing Alvarez as the bell sounds to end round four. Alvarez was having his best round of the fight until he resorted to dirty tactics. The points in round four. Saul Alvarez with 18 points, Ronald Wright with 2 points. I think Canelo may get himself disqualified if he continues this dirty strategy of his. It doesn't appear as if his corner is giving him any solid advice to prevent him from losing this fight on a disqualification. The bell sounds for round five. Alvarez begins the round by missing with a combination. Wright lands a two-point combination, then misses with another combo. Alvarez lands a two-point left jab. Wright lands a two-point left jab. Saul Alvarez lands a three-point left uppercut and a right cross for 3 points. The action is heating up, folks. Ronald Wright lands a five-point right cross that hurt Alvarez. Alvarez stumbles back a little. Alvarez regains his senses and lands a three-point right uppercut. Wright misses with a right cross. The fighters are in ring center. Alvarez clinches. Wright moves to Alvarez's left, then fires a two-point right jab. The bell sounds to end round five. The points scored in round five. Both fighters had 11 points each in that round. From my vantage point, I would give the round to Wright because he definitely hurt Alvarez. This crowd at the Thomas and Mack Center has gotten its money's worth this evening with this main event as the bell sounds for round six. Alvarez misses with a right hook, but scores with a two-point combo. Wright stalks his man, keeping his high guard up. Alvarez lands a three-point left hook, misses with a left jab, then lands a four-point right hook. Alvarez lands a combination for 4 points. Wright counters with a two-point left uppercut, then misses a right cross. Wright fires off a two-point left jab and two-point left uppercut. Alvarez misses with a right hook. Wright misses with a counter jab. Wright steps back an inch, then lands a two-point combination before the bell sounds to end round six. Points scored in round six. Saul Alvarez with 14 points. Ronald Wright with 8 points. The bell sounds for round seven. Wright lands a partially blocked right cross for 1 point. He follows with a partially blocked right hook for 1 point, then lands a solid two-point left jab. Alvarez counters with a two-point left jab. Wright lands a two-point left hook and misses with a right cross. Alvarez grabs right in a clinch. Alvarez attempts to butt right in the head as they break out of the clinch. The ref stops the fight and tells Alvarez that he is in danger of losing on disqualification. Alvarez nods and reaches out to tap Wright's gloves. The fight continues as the crowd boos Canelo. Wright lands a two-point right jab and then misses a combo. Alvarez clinches again. Wright misses with a left uppercut. Wright follows with a three-point combination. Wright clinches as the bell sounds, ending round 7. The points scored in round 7. 2 points for Alvarez, 11 points for Wright. This is a very hard fight to judge. I think Alvarez would be slightly ahead if he didn't have points deducted. Let's see how the fight evolves as we move to round 8. Alvarez misses with a combination at right center. Wright is so slick at dodging punches. Well, I spoke too soon as Alvarez's right cross got through to Wright for 3 points. The fighters are in ring center. Alvarez lands a 3-point combination, then a 2-point left jab to the cheek. Wright counter with 2-point combination. The fighters are in ring center. Wright misses with a jab. Wright misses with a left cross and right uppercut. Alvarez counters with a 2-point left hook. Wright lands a 2-point right cross. Wright lands a 2-point right jab. Wright throws a 2-point uppercut that snaps Alvarez's head back. Alvarez clinches Wright as the bell sounds to end round 8. Points scored in round 8. Saul Alvarez with 11 points, Ronald Wright with 8 points. This is still a very hard fight to judge as round 9 begins. Wright starts round 9 with a 3-point left uppercut. Alvarez misses with a combination, then clinches. Wright lands a 4-point right hook that forced Canelo to step back. Alvarez moves back to ring center and misses a right cross. Alvarez misses with a cross. Wright counters with a 2-point left jab to the body. Alvarez lands a 2-point left uppercut. Alvarez lands a solid 4-point left cross to Wright's jaw. Alvarez misses with a right hook, but scores another left cross for 2 points as the bell sounds. Points scored in round 9. Saul Alvarez with 8 points. Ronald Wright with 9 points. Who do you have in this tight fight as we begin round 10? Wright lands a 2-point right jab to start the round. Wright misses with a left cross. Alvarez misses with a counter jab. Wright lands a partially blocked left uppercut for 1 point. Alvarez lands a partially blocked left cross for 1 point. Solid 3-point right hook by Wright to the gut. Alvarez lands a 2-point left jab and follows with another 2-point left jab. Those double jabs were a thing of beauty. The fighters are in ring center. Alvarez clinches. Alvarez breaks from the clinch and misses with a left cross. Alvarez misses with a combination as the bell sounds to end round 10. The points scored in round 10. Saul Alvarez with 5 points. Ronald Wright with 6 points. The promoter did a great job of matching these two evenly matched fighters. If you have a fantasy match that you would like to see on this podcast, leave your comments at the YouTube channel Nourished by History or at the website sportshistorynetwork.com. Your name will be mentioned as a promoter on air. Round 11 begins with Alvarez throwing 2 wild right uppercuts that miss the mark. Wright counters with a 2-point left jab. Alvarez clinches. Out of the break, Wright misses with a left cross. Alvarez misses with a left cross and left jab. Wright misses with a counter right uppercut. Wright clinches. Given the pace of the previous 10 rounds, the fighters may be a little gassed now. Wright lands a 2-point combination. Wright is moving about the ring, trying to establish position. The fighters are in ring center. Alvarez misses with a left hook. Alvarez lands a 2-point right cross. Wright misses with his own right cross. Alvarez misses with a combination. Wright drops his high guard and lands a crushing right hook for 5 points that buckled Alvarez's knees. The crowd is going wild over that punch. It was Wright's best of the night. Alvarez quickly grabs Wright in a clinch and holds him until the bell sounds to end round 11. Ronald Wright scores 5 points. Saul Alvarez's knees buckled. Alvarez's corner is helping him back to his corner. I think if there were another 10 seconds in that round, Alvarez would have been knocked out for the first time in his career. Points scored in round 11. Saul Alvarez with 2 points. Ronald Wright with 9 points. The crowd at the Thomas and Mac is on its feet, anticipating an exciting last round. The bell has rung for the 12th and final round of this evening's bout. Wright clinches at ring center. Wright lands a solid 4 left uppercut that had sweat flying off Alvarez's head. I don't think Alvarez has gotten over the last round. He still appears a little dazed. Wright misses with a combination. Alvarez misses with a counter left jab. Alvarez misses with a left uppercut. Alvarez lands a partially blocked left uppercut for 1 point. Alvarez lands a 4-point right hook to the ribcage. Alvarez follows with a 3-point right cross. Alvarez misses with a left jab. The fighters are in ring center. Alvarez has cut off the ring and pinned Ronald Wright in far corner. Wright clinches. Wright lands a 2-point right uppercut. Alvarez lands a partially blocked combination for 1 point. Alvarez lands a 2-point left jab before the bell sounds ending this exciting bout. Points scored in the 12th round. Saul Alvarez with 11 points. Ronald Wright with 6 points. This is a hard one to score. They both had their moments. The docking of points from Alvarez may hurt him. Let's see what the judges say. Mark Kahn scores the bout 116. 112 Billy Burke scores the bout 117. 110 Wilfredo Garcia scores the bout 115. 112. For the winner by unanimous decision, Ronald Wright. I don't know what fight Judge Billy Burke was looking at. 117. 110 Wright. The crowd booed when it heard his scoring. Even with the point deductions, how do you arrive at that score? But you know how it is with Vegas scoring. Somebody may have been on the take. From my vantage point, I had it as a draw. How did you score it at home? Let's go back to the Bangkok studio with our presenter, Greg Rashid.
Yes, back in Bangkok here. It's Swati Kopp again. I didn't say that earlier, which means hello and Thai. And what do you think of that fight? Yeah, no knockdowns, but a strategic, action-packed fight. And I think if it really had happened, there was a time capsule to bring them together, time machine to bring them together. I could see that happening. I could see that. Now, Winky Wright was flipped. I think the closest that would come to that, this fight for Canelo would be the Floyd Mayweather fight. Because Floyd uses tricks and all that. He was older than Canelo. Canelo was bigger than him, but he wasn't ready. You know, he wasn't ready for Floyd. And I don't think Canelo would be really ready for the defense of Winky Wright, that high guard, the way he would slip punches, going out or being a southpaw. You know, he was something. So, again, if you've never seen Winky Wright, there are a number of his fights on YouTube. Check him out. Really check him out. But I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you enjoyed the interview prior with the wonderful Darrell Williamson. I plan to have him back on here again, as well as other boxers, boxing authors, editors, and some of you out there. Some of you folks that listen to the program who are boxing fans who want to be on here, want to do a little talking. I'm working on how I can do this live so I can interview and just talk to folks. Talk to folks out there who listen to these programs. You know, and a lot of people listen, they listen on Facebook or they listen on YouTube on my channel, Nourished by History. And I suggest if you have not been there yet, please go to Nourished by History. Besides having this program on there, I put a lot of boxing on there. You know, a lot of health tips too. So check it out. Also, I'm on Sports History Network. The Sports History Network just got on there. Thankful for being on there. You know, this show, Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast, is a little bit everywhere. You can check it out. And also, all my friends and family are out there in Colorado who listen every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Mountain Time on KUHSDenver.com, created by the one and only, the legendary Henry Archuleta. Please listen to the show, and please, you know, go check out Devero, those of you in Colorado. Go check out Touch of Sleep there in Inglewood. Go check it out. You know, support Devero. He's doing a great job in the community. Just a great guy. But again, we're going to get ready to get out of here right now. This is Greg Rashid. Again, I apologize for early mic problems, but I hope you got the gist of the program. But we'll be back next time. And again, if you want to promote this fight, just send me a message on Facebook or Nourished by History or by on the Sports History Network. And let me know who you want to see fight next. And we'll put it on here. And again, this is Greg Rashid. Go in love, go in peace. Help somebody along the way. And every day when you wake up, first thing to do is get up, look in that mirror and hug yourself and say, you love yourself. And if you're sight impaired, get up, hug yourself and say, you love yourself. Because if you don't love yourself, you can't do anything. I mean, really, you can't help anyone. You can't, because if you can't help yourself, you can't help anyone. So just love yourself. Bring joy wherever you are, in your community, your prefecture, your condo, your apartment, wherever you are, farmland, wherever you are. Just bring some joy and happiness. We're all in this together on this small, small planet. So go in love, go in peace. This is Greg Rashid. We'll see you next time on the Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing Podcast. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in. See you next time.